Welcome to Poets Corner. I'm your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Rexy, inviting you to join me for part two of T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats, on which the musical Cats was based. I'll start with Gus, Theater Cat. Gus is the cat at the theater door. His name, as I ought to have told you before, is really Asparagus. That's such a fuss to pronounce that we usually just call him Gus. His coat's very shabby. He's thin as a rake, and he suffers from palsy that makes his paws shake. Yet he was, in his youth, quite the smartest of cats, but no longer a terror to mice and to rats. For he isn't the cat that he was in his prime, though his name was quite famous, he says, in its time. And whenever he joins his friends at their club, which takes place at the back of the neighboring pub, he loves to regale them, if someone else pays, with anecdotes drawn from his palmiest days. For he once was a star of the highest degree. He has acted with Irving, he's acted with Tree. And he likes to relate his success on the halls, where the gallery once gave him 7 cat calls. But his grandest creation, as he loves to tell, was Fire for a Fiddle, the Fiend of the Fell. I have played, so he says, every possible part, and I used to know 70 speeches by heart. I'd extemporize back chat. I knew how to gag, and I knew how to let the cat out of the bag. I knew how to act with my back and my tail. With an hour of rehearsal, I never could fail. I'd a voice that would soften the hardest of hearts, whether I took the lead or in character parts. I have sat by the bedside of poor little Nell. When the curfew was rung, then I swung on the bell. In the pantomime season, I never fell flat, and I once understudied Dick Whittington's cat. But my grandest creation, as history will tell, was Fire for a Fiddle, the Fiend of the Fell. Then if someone will give him a toothful of gin, he will tell how he once played a part in East Lynne. At a Shakespeare performance, he once walked on Pat, when some actor suggested the need for a cat. He once played a tiger, and could do it again, which an Indian colonel pursued down a drain. And he thinks that he still can, much better than most, produced blood-curdling noises to bring on the ghost. And he once crossed the stage on a telegraph wire to rescue a child when a house was on fire. And he says, now these kittens these days, they do not get trained as we did in the days when Victoria reigned. They never get drilled in a regular troop, and they think they are smart just to jump through a hoop. And he'll say as he scratches himself with his claws, well, the theater's certainly not what it was. These modern productions are all very well, but there's nothing to equal, from what I hear tell, that moment of mystery when I made history, as Fire for a Fiddle, the Fiend of the Fell. Bustopher Jones, the cat about town. Bustopher Jones is not skin and bones. In fact, he's remarkably fat. He doesn't haunt pubs. He has 8 or 9 clubs, for he's the St. James's Street cat. He's the cat we all greet as he walks down the street in his coat of fastidious black. No commonplace mousers have such well-cut trousers or such an impeccable back. In the whole of St. James's, the smartest of names is the name of this brummel of cats, and we're all of us proud to be nodded or bowed to by Bustopher Jones in white spats. His visits are occasionally to the senior educational, and it is against the rules for any one cat to belong both to that and the joint superior schools. For a similar reason, when game is in season, he has found, not at foxes, but blimps. But he's frequently seen at the gay stage and screen, which is famous for winkles and shrimps. In the season of venison, he gives his benison to the pothunter's succulent bones, and just before noon's, not a moment too soon to drop in for a drink at the drones. When he's seen in a hurry, there's probably curry at the Siamese or at the glutton. If he looks full of gloom, then he's lunched at the tomb on cabbage, rice pudding, and mutton. So much in this way passes Bustopher's day. At one club or another he's found. It can cause no surprise that under our eyes he has grown unmistakably round. He's a 25-pounder, or I am a bounder, and he's putting on weight every day. But he's so well preserved because he's observed all his life a routine, so he'll say. And to put it in rhyme, I shall last out my time is the word for this stoutest of cats. It must and it shall be spring in Pall Mall, while Bustopher Jones wears white spats. Skimbleshanks, the railway cat. There's a whisper down the line at 11:39, when the night mail's ready to depart, saying, Skimble, where is Skimble? Has he gone to hunt the thimble? We must find him or the train can't start. All the guards and all the porters, and the stage master's orders, they are all searching high and low, saying, Skimble, where is Skimble? For unless he's very nimble, then the night mail just can't go. At 11:42, then the signal's nearly due, and the passengers are frantic to a man. Then Skimble will appear, and he'll saunter to the rear. He's been busy in the luggage van. He gives one flash of his glass-green eyes, and the signal goes, all clear! And we're off at last for the northern part of the northern hemisphere. You may say that by and large, it is Skimble who's in charge of the sleeping car express. From the driver and the guards to the bagman playing cards, he will supervise them all, more or less. Down the corridor he paces and examines all the faces of the travelers in the first and in the third. He establishes control by a regular patrol, and he'd know at once if anything occurred. He will watch you without winking, and he sees what you are thinking, and it's certain that he doesn't approve of hilarity and riot. So the folk are very quiet when Skimble is about and on the move. You can play no pranks with Skimbleshanks. He's a cat that cannot be ignored. So nothing goes wrong on the northern mail when Skimbleshanks is aboard. Oh, it's very pleasant when you have found your little den with your name written up on the door. And the berth is very neat, with a neatly folded sheet, and there's not a speck of dust upon the floor. There is every sort of light. You can make it dark or bright. There's a button that you turn to make a breeze. There's a funny little basin you're supposed to wash your face in, and a crank to shut the window if you sneeze. Then the guard looks in politely and will ask you very brightly, do you like your morning tea weak or strong? But Skimble's just behind him, and was ready to remind him, for Skimble won't let anything go wrong. And when you creep into your cozy berth and pull up the counterpane, you are bound to admit that it's very nice to know that you won't be bothered by mice. You can leave all that to the railway cat, the cat of the railway train. In the middle of the night, he is always fresh and bright. Every now and then he has a cup of tea with perhaps a drop of scotch while he's keeping on the watch, only stopping here and there to catch a flea. You were fast asleep at Crewe, and so you never knew that he was walking up and down the station. You were sleeping all the while he was busy at Carlisle, where he greets the station master with elation. But you saw him at Dumfries, where he summons the police if there's anything they ought to know about. When you get to Gallow Gate, there you do not have to wait, for Skimbleshanks will help you to get out. He gives you a wave of his long tail, which says, "I'll see you again." You'll meet without fail on the midnight mail, the cat of the railway train. The addressing of cats. You've read of several kinds of cat, and my opinion now is that you should need no interpreter to understand their character. You now have learned enough to see that cats are much like you and me and other people whom we find possessed of various types of mind. For some are sane, and some are mad, and some are good, and some are bad, and some are better, some are worse, but all may be described in verse. You've seen them both at work and games, and learnt about their proper names, their habits, and their habitat, but how would you address a cat? So first your memory I'll jog and say, a cat is not a dog. Now, dogs pretend they like to fight. They often bark, more seldom bite. But yet a dog is, on the whole, what you would call a simple soul. Of course, I'm not including Peaks and such fantastic canine freaks. The usual dog about town is much inclined to play the clown, and far from showing too much pride, is frequently undignified. He's very easily taken in. Just chuck him underneath the chin, or slap his back, or shake his paw, and he will gamble and guffaw. He's such an easy-going lout, he'll answer any hail or shout. Again, I must remind you that a dog's a dog, a cat's a cat. With cats, some say, one rule is true. Don't speak till you are spoken to. Myself, I do not hold with that. I say you should address a cat, but always keep in mind that he resents familiarity. I bow, and taking off my hat, address him in this form. Oh, cat! But if he is the cat next door, whom I have often met before, he comes to see me in my flat. I greet him with an oopsa cat. I've heard them call him James, Buzz James, but we've not got so far as names. Before a cat will condescend to treat you as a trusted friend, some little token of esteem is needed, like a dish of cream. And you might now and then supply some caviar or Strasbourg pie, some potted grouse or salmon paste. He's sure to have his personal taste. I know a cat who makes a habit of eating nothing else but rabbit, and when he's finished, licks his paws so as not to waste the onion sauce. A cat's entitled to expect these evidences of respect. And so, in time, you reach your aim, and finally call him by his name. So this is this, and that is that, and there's how you address a cat. Cat Morgan introduces himself. "I was once a pirate what sailed the high seas, but now I've retired as a commissionaire, and that's how you find me a-taking my ease and keeping the door in Bloomsbury Square. I'm partial to partridges, likewise to grouse, and I favour that Devonshire cream in a bowl. But I'm allus content with a drink on the house and a bit of cold fish when I done me patrol. I ain't got much polish, me manners is gruff, but I've got a good coat, and I keep meself smart. And everyone says, and I guess that's enough, you can't but like Morgan, he's got a kind art. I get knocked about on the Barbary Coast, and me voice it ain't such a mellifluous organ. But yet I can state, and I'm not one to boast, that some of the gals is dead keen on old Morgan. So if you have business with Faber, I'll give you this tip, and it's worth a lot more. You'll save yourself time, and you'll spare yourself labor if you make friends with the cat at the door." Of the awful battle of the Peaks and the Pollicles, together with some account of the participation of the Pugs and the Palms and the intervention of the great Rumpus Cat. The Peaks and the Pollicles, everyone knows, are proud and implacable, passionate foes. It's always the same wherever one goes. And the Pugs and the Palms, although most people say that they do not like fighting, will often display every symptom of wanting to join in the fray. And they bark, 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 until you can hear them all over the park. Now, on the occasion of which I shall speak, almost nothing had happened for nearly a week, and that's a long time for a paw or a peek. The big police dog was away from his beat. I don't know the reason, but most people think he slipped into Bricklayer's arms for a drink. And no one at all was about on the street when a peek and a pollicle happened to meet. They did not advance or exactly retreat, but they glared at each other and scraped their hind feet and started to bark, 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 until you could hear them all over the park. Now the peak, although people may say what they please, is no British dog, but a heathen Chinese. And so all the peaks, when they heard the uproar, some came to the window, some came to the door. There were surely a dozen, more likely a score. And together they started to grumble and wheeze in their huffery and snuffery heathen Chinese, but a terrible din is what pollicles like. For your pollicle dog is your dour Yorkshire tyke, and his braw Scottish cousins are snappers and biters, and every dog jack of them notable fighters. And so they stepped out with their pipers in order, playing When the Blue Bonnets Came Over the Border. Then the Pugs and the Palms held no longer aloof, but some from the balcony, some from the roof, joined in to the din with a bark, 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 until you could hear them all over the park. Now, when these bold heroes together assembled, the traffic all stopped, and the underground trembled, and some of the neighbors were so much afraid that they started to ring up the fire brigade. When suddenly, up from a small basement flat, why, who should stalk out but the great Rumpus Cat? His eyes were like fireballs, fearfully blazing. He gave a great yawn, and his jaws were amazing. And when he looked out through the bars of the area, you never saw anything fiercer or hairier. And what with the glare of his eyes and his yawning, the peaks and the pollicles quickly took warning. He looked at the sky, and he gave a great leap, and they, every last one of them, scattered like sheep. And when the police dog returned to his beat, there wasn't a single one left in the street. McCavity, the mystery cat. McCavity's a mystery cat. He's called the Hidden Paw, for he's the master criminal who can defy the law. He's the bafflement of Scotland Yard, the flying squad's despair, for when they reach the scene of crime, McCavity's not there. McCavity, McCavity, there's no one like McCavity. He's broken every human law. He breaks the law of gravity. His powers of levitation would make a faker stare. And when you reach the scene of crime, McCavity's not there. You may seek him in the basement. You may look up in the air. But I tell you once and once again, McCavity's not there. McCavity's a ginger cat. He's very tall and thin. You would know him if you saw him, for his eyes are sunken in. His brow is deeply lined with thought. His head is highly domed. His coat is dusty from neglect. His whiskers are uncombed. He sways his head from side to side with movements like a snake. And when you think he's half asleep, he's always wide awake. McCavity, McCavity, there's no one like McCavity, for he's a fiend in feline shape, a monster of depravity. You may meet him in a by street, you may see him in the square, but when a crime's discovered, then McCavity's not there. He's outwardly respectable, they say he cheats at cards, and his footprints are not found in any file of Scotland Yard's. And when the larder's looted, or the jewel case is rifled, or when the milk is missing, or another peak's been stifled, or the greenhouse glass is broken, and the trellis past repair, aye, there's the wonder of the thing, McCavity's not there. And when the Foreign Office finds a treaty's gone astray, or the Admiralty lose some plans and drawings by the way, there may be a scrap of paper in the hall or on the stair, but it's useless to investigate. McCavity's not there. And when the loss has been disclosed, the Secret Service say, it must have been McCavity. But he's a mile away. You'll be sure to find him resting, or a licking of his thumbs, or engaged in doing complicated long division sums. McCavity, McCavity, there's no one like McCavity. There never was a cat of such deceitfulness and suavity. He always has an alibi, and one or two to spare. And whatever time the deed took place, McCavity wasn't there. And they say that all the cats whose wicked deeds are widely known, I might mention Mungo Jerry, I might mention Griddlebone, are nothing more than agents for the cat who all the time just controls their operations. They're Napoleon of crime. Thank you for listening to Poet's Corner as we revisited T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. I'm your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer, Rexy.
McCavity's a mystery cat. He's called the Hidden Paw, for he's the master criminal who can defy the law. He's the bafflement of Scotland Yard, the flying squad's despair. For when they reach the scene of crime, the cavity's not there. McCavity, there's no one like McCavity. He's broken every human law. He breaks the law of gravity. His powers of levitation would make a fakir stare. And when you reach the scene of crime, McCavity's not there. You may seek him in the basement. You may look up in the But I tell you once and once again, McCavity is not there! McCavity is a ginger cat. He's very tall and thin. You would know him if you saw him, for his eyes are sunken in. His brow is deeply lined with thought. His head is highly domed. His coat is dusty from neglect. His whiskers are uncombed. He sways his head from side to side with movements like a snake. And when you think he's half asleep, he's always wide awake! McCavity, McCavity, there's no one like McCavity. For he's a fiend in feline shape, a monster of depravity. You may meet him in a by street, you may see him in the square. Discovered then, McCavity's not there. He's outwardly respectable. I know he cheats at cards, and his footprints are not found in any files of Scotland Yards. And when the lord is looted,
or the jewel case is rifled,
or when the milk is missing,
or I know the pig's been stifled,
or the greenhouse glass is broken, and the trellis past repair, there's the wonder of the thing, McCavity's not there.